Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics.
This is Carl Carlson, and this is Speaking of Reliability.
And this is Fred Schenkelberg. Welcome to the show.
You know, Fred, I was thinking about a very broad subject, you know, because we're doing much more work at home and having to conduct web meetings. And I was reflecting on the difference between conducting and leading web meetings versus in person, because I'm going to be doing more and more of my teaching remotely. And so I've been reflecting on what are the skills that are needed to bridge that gap between in-person teams and web meetings. And so I just wanted to talk that over in general with you and kind of explore the subject of facilitation skills and which ones of those skills transfer to remote, and then how you can enhance the results by improving your skills. That was the topic. I thought it'd be fun to talk over. It's pretty broad subject because I've got a whole chapter in my book, Effective FMEs, on facilitation, because I think it's really important. And I teach facilitating meetings, or really facilitating FMEAs, on a regular basis. And so I've got books sitting on my bookshelf on the subject of facilitation and things. But I don't want to look at it from an academic point of view. I just want to look at it from an experience point of view. What are some of the most important skills that we need to work on to be better facilitators? Because we're always trying to influence engineering groups as reliability engineers. Yeah. And in order to do that, we have to be able to interact with people and very often have to lead meetings or lead teams.
Yeah. Well, you kind of dove into the deep end of the pool here saying, how do we do better with this online and, in Zoom meeting type environment? You got to start way prior to that, because you and I have both run into people that are just horrible at conducting just a simple meeting, whether it's with one other person in person or a small team. And we all have heard about these things. Set an agenda. Make sure it's clear. Make sure you do your homework before you go to the meeting. Make sure there's clear expectations that if you're supposed to bring a report, well, what report? And are you expected to talk about it for 30 seconds or 3 hours? What are the expectations? What's the plan here? What's the outcomes? Why are we meeting? How do we know when we're done? What's the level of quality of that thing? Is there a timekeeper or a fixed agenda, or are we brainstorming, or, just fundamental, basic, what day and time and where are we meeting? You know, is everybody got the link? Does everybody have the capability to do it? Those are all, I call them blocking and tackling for any meeting or event or whatever. You just have to do that. And so many people don't. That's before you even get to facilitation, is you got to start a week prior to the event getting it right.
Yeah, I think you're right. There's some organizing, very simple organizing skills that make a meeting go better, make a team go better. And because you don't want to walk in cold and say, okay, what are we here for? what should we do? That kind of thing.
Yeah, we've got an hour. Now let's talk about the Red Sox.
Yeah. Yeah. And just as an aside, this is obviously a really big topic. And what we could do at some point in the future is break this down, because I've got, I think there's 11 skills that I typically teach about on facilitation. And it'd be interesting to do a podcast on each of the different skills. Things like brainstorming, things like encouraging participation, things like active listening. Those are all part of the 11 skills that I talk about. And there's probably more than that. So this is just one person's view, mine, bringing into this subject. And I know you have a lot of experience as well, but it'd be interesting to do a series of that go a little deeper into each of the skills that, such as making decisions or conflict management. All of those I've taken courses on. I don't know if you have.
Definitely.
Back in the day, we'd go to active listening course and you'd spend 2 hours learning how to active listening and another one day on how to manage conflicts and things. And they all have their own books and things. But
I've got a shelf full of this stuff and lots and lots of experience. I was very fortunate in that realm. And I agree with you. The facilitation skills to many engineers sounds like a soft science, and the hair in the back of your neck might stand up and go, I don't need to deal with that. I just do the facts, man. I just write the report and I stay out of there dealing with other people. And you and I have both said this many times, is that the soft skills, the ability to present and persuade and to lead and to encourage and to the elements that create a culture around reliability engineering thinking or reliability thinking is so powerful, yet no HALT report is going to do that. It's the way it's presented, the way it's set up, the way it's setting the expectations about what that tool does, reinforcing those expectations, following up with people so that they fully understand and have the, I'm using air quotes here, buy-in to this is useful and valuable, and then reinforcing it by saying this is the value that was created by doing that. You know, all of those pieces are soft skills, facilitation skills to a large degree. So beyond just the blocking and tackling, which I think facilitation starts when the idea of we need to have a meeting or an event or do something, it starts, right? Facilitation skills start well before you actually talk to anybody. And then there's, I think the next part is that it has to be safe. That this concept of the facilitator is not where I grew up, there was a big Catholic school network, grade school all the way through high school. And one of the teachers I had, and I was in the public schools, not the Catholic schools, but one of the teachers that was in the Catholic schools was in our school and was teaching there. I think she transferred to the public system at some point. And she had this 18-inch wooden ruler that was, I was a typing class, and if you were caught looking at your hands as you're learning how to type, that 18-inch ruler would come across your knuckles. And that was just
a little incentive.
A little incentive, yeah. Bleeding on your paper is not good. But the idea was, I was terrified in that class, you know, and I learned how to type. But I don't recommend that as a technique. Is if you're facilitating a meeting and somebody clears their throat, well, don't do that. Or somebody asks a question, well, that's a stupid question, and don't answer it. You know, things like that can destroy the veil of here's a place I can contribute. Here's a place that it's safe for me to ask a question. Here's a place that an idea is. And that's why we do brainstorming silently. Right. And no criticism, you know, no judging of ideas and brainstorming. Because as soon as the chief technical person looks at it and goes, well, that'll never work, there's no more ideas from the rest of the group.
Exactly. Exactly. And the gem is sitting underneath the surface.
That's right. And that's what I mean by safety. And that starts as in setting expectations and setting a consistent pattern of listening, using a range of these different skills so that the range of people and their willingness to participate is encouraged, is allowed.
Okay, I like this. I like the concept of the safety. And so that can also come into who you invite to meetings. Mm-hmm. So if you have some control over who gets invited, if you invite like the very top person on a project leader and then a bunch of other engineers, if you don't set the table, so to speak, or set the environment, then people will tend to look to the very top person before they open their mouth and say anything.
And literally, I mean, you know, it's hard to do on a Zoom meeting because you don't know where they're looking necessarily. Mm-hmm. They got a screen in front of them you can't see, but in an actual meeting, they will actually turn their head and look at the alpha. Mm-hmm. And it may not be the manager, it may be somebody else, the alpha, and to say, is it okay to present?
Yeah, they're looking at a little nod or a little their eye movement or something that gives them the okay to speak. And so that really stifles creativity and contributions.
It can. I mean, and so if you're running into that circumstance, practically what I do is I go sit down and talk to them and say, hey, look, this is what we're trying to do. You understand that we need to get ideas from everybody else. And if they agree with that, they can be a champion to help you create that safe environment and encourage other people to talk. But if they come in the meeting and go, this is, why are we meeting? I know the answer to this. Let's get down to work. Here, you do this, you do that, you do that. And there's no discussion. Well, they just took over your meeting and ran over it. And it may have completely missed the mark of why we were getting together. And they may, that problem themselves may be what the issue is. You know,
so you want to create that environment. You can talk to the whole group. And like you say, and I agree with you, is that if you have the alpha in there that tends to dominate the conversation or whatever, you want to talk to that person separately or even get them to speak to the group to encourage people to participate, to compensate for that, I'll call it the alpha response silence that can occur. So just for fun, what's the, and I've got my own thoughts on this too, but we can both contribute on this. What, in addition to the safety thing, what is the most important skill that in terms of running good meetings, facilitating good teams, getting good results in teams, what's a really important skill that from your point of view that can be improved upon with a lot of people?
Oh, there's a difference in my mind of what's the most important skills and what most people can improve on. I think the most important thing is that if you're going to take time with other people, that there needs to be some rational desired outcome that is worth that effort of getting together. If we get together as a meeting, and I see this way too often in staff meetings or, you know, problem solving meetings or whatever, we're going to form a team. All right, great. Well, what's this team going to do? What's the outcome? And how do you know? So it's, what are we trying to achieve? How will we know when we've achieved it? And to what degree of, you know, level of quality or value or constraints do we have to meet? So if we're getting together the brainstorm, what are we trying to solve? Or is this a, you know, we can brainstorm all day long, but about what? You know, do we have a clear picture of what the problem is and how do we know when we've got a suitable answer? What's the criteria we judge the results?
Those are two really important points you're making there, which one is having good objectives, but then also having measurable or at least noticeable, observable criteria when you achieve the objectives.
That's right. It's always... just because you have an hour doesn't mean you have to stay there for an hour. If you've achieved the objective and you know now that you've achieved this objective because you set the criteria of how do you know when you're done, you can say, hey, we're done. And then you're off. You're off to implement or do other stuff.
Right? I so appreciate that when people do that.
Oh, yeah.
That's just a wonderful thing.
It is. And people want to go to meetings that actually, you know, measurably get stuff done. I think you won't have trouble getting people there if you have that pattern. So I think there's that piece. I think that's a most important piece to setting up and running a team or a meeting or an event or whatever. The most improved thing is to create space to allow people to contribute. We've talked about it before that some people want to think through what they want to say and are not quick to interrupt or interject or stuff. There's people that they love hearing themselves talk. I think I'm one of those sometimes, a lot of times, you know, and so it's, how do you create space? And some of it is just go around the room and call on people. And some people respond to that well, and other people pass, right? Whether they say anything or not, they just pass, essentially, and don't contribute much. But they need a different kind of space to flourish. And it might be a silent brainstorm. It might be a voting process, or it might be some other technique that allows them to contribute and bring them out. And some of that skill is, which I see is very hard for people to do, is because it's a balance. How do you temper the ones that want to take the chalk away and take the meeting and talk all the time? And not eliminate them, right? You still want their contribution, but not as much. and you want the other people's contribution more.
Well, very good. So that you're asking the right questions, and then I think that's a really important skill to develop. So let me answer the same question that I posed, mm-hmm. and I'll answer it the same way you did, which is the there's what people think they need, and then there's what I think they need. When I survey people and when I teach facilitation, I always ask the teams. I go over here. Here's the kind of a high level types of skills you could have that are part of any facilitation handbook. Which ones do you have the most trouble with? Mm-hmm. And when I ask it that way, every single class I've run, it comes down to a skill of controlling discussion. Mm-hmm. So from the point of view of the students, they have the most trouble with controlling discussion. Now, from my observation, the most important skill is encouraging participation. And that's what I think is very similar to what you were talking about. Create the space where nobody can dominate. In other words, you draw out the introvert, the person who tends to be introvert. So the way I teach that is to explain the difference between extrovert and introvert and let people know that everybody has a valuable contribution and introverts are no less important than extroverts. Extroverts just talk more. Introverts think more. Mm-hmm. Extroverts tend to talk before they think. Introverts tend to think before they talk.
Right.
And so there's different ways of processing information. But it doesn't mean the extroverts have more contribution to make or are more valuable. And so I explain that to the teams. And then I begin teaching how to encourage participation, which is similar to what you were talking about, create the space. And I'll ask people that tend to be on the introverted side, Jill, what do you think about what Joe just said, if Joe's an extrovert? And if Jill starts to speak and Joe interrupts, I say, okay, Joe, hold on a minute. Let's listen to Jill. Yeah. And basically to give them the space and the opportunity, because I think this is basic respect for people.
Yeah.
The everybody's important. Everybody has an important contribution to make. And I believe these skills that we're talking about can be practiced. And I set up in the room, exercises where people practice the skills in a safe mm-hmm. environment.
Yep. Yeah. You know, in person, one of the skills I learned long, long time ago is that, so let's say Joe's going to interrupt and he starts interrupting. And as a facilitator, I just put my hand up like a stop sign hand mm-hmm. facing them, but no eye contact. It's very important. No eye contact. You just put your hand up to him.
You don't want to elicit aggression or anything like that.
That's right. I'm focusing on what Jill has to say. I'm looking at Jill and I put my hand up and it works like magic.
That's beautiful.
And then as they stop, then I lower my hand slowly and mm-hmm. continue to focus on and listen to what Jill's saying. It is phenomenal how magical that works. And it takes practice to get it right and to do this mm-hmm. stuff and the timing and everything else. But it doesn't mean that I have to exert an authority, as you mentioned, to say, Joe, please, let's hear what Jill has to say. Now, the hand up doesn't work on Zoom because I don't have that proximity. They don't know if I'm looking right at them or not. So it's setting those expectations and setting the boundaries and the rules of the meeting is that when somebody's talking, please let them finish. And then reinforcing it in a polite way. In some part of Zoom is you can mute somebody, right? You can be pretty aggressive about it and say, all right,
yeah,
Joe, you're done. Mute.
Well, let's brainstorm for a minute. We got a couple minutes left on this podcast. Let's brainstorm for a minute how we can leverage the digital world, the web meetings, to accomplish these kind of objectives. Because I'm thinking that you can keep track of when you hear from different people. So if you mm-hmm. had a little piece of paper with, you know, eight names on it, and I don't like large meetings. I don't want to have meetings with 30 people in them. On an FME, I got limited to 8 people, as the most, because I think when you get beyond that, it just becomes too hard to get to consensus. And there may be reasons to have more on certain types of meetings, but I prefer smaller meetings. And it's very easy then to have the list of names and just put a little check when you hear from people. And then if you haven't heard from someone, Jill, in a while, or Joe, you ask for their viewpoint.
Yeah.
And so that's one way possibly to do it.
Well, I think another, I mean, it goes back, is kind of a summary of what we're doing, is when we're doing an online meeting, a Zoom meeting, it's even more important to set the objective and create the, here's our norms of how this meeting is operated. If it's a team that you meet regularly with, you can actually take the time to, let's talk through how we want to operate our meeting. What's the expectations? What's the boundaries? What are the rules that we agree to abide by? If it's a one-time meeting, it's up to the facilitator to either, here's the rules, you know, or the guidelines of how we want to operate, or reinforce it as you go to create it on the fly. And it's tricky either way, but the setting it clear, this is what we're here for, here's what we're trying to do. And even a comment early on saying, and we want to hear from everybody. And I will be setting the expectation that I will call on you if we haven't heard from you in a while.
I think that's a good expectation. I like that to say, not only do we need you, we want you, we want to hear from you, but letting people know that you will be calling on them, not to put them on the spot, but you want to be sure you're getting their input on things. Mm-hmm. And that way you can sort of go around the room. It doesn't have to be in an exact sequence of where they are on the virtual table,
right,
but just sort of randomly go around the room and get people's input on a regular basis, I think is a good way to encourage participation in a virtual world.
Yeah. And, you know, and there's other pieces of it is setting the expectation is of ideas or divergence, or it's not, if maybe you're not in a actual brainstorming session, but if somebody comes up with a great idea, well, online, how do you want to handle that? You know, in a live meeting, I would use a technique called parking lot. You know, oh, here's a great idea. And we go put it on the wall where everybody can see it, right? It's still there. It's not forgotten. We'll get to it, or we'll bring it to the next meeting. In Zoom, if you got a great idea, you don't need to interrupt the flow of things, right? Put it in the chat window. Put it on the whiteboard.
Exactly.
You know, put it on our common form. Capture stuff.
I'll mention one other common occurrence is where somebody tends to be extroverted and they tend to dominate. I have two ways I'll approach that in web meetings or in person. Way number one is in the actual meeting itself. If the person is continuing to dominate, I'll say, okay, Joe, I thank you very much. I've heard what you've said, and we all have. I appreciate that. Now I want to hear from other people. Mm-hmm. And I'll interrupt if need be to get that, because I will not let someone dominate a meeting. That's disrespectful to others. And then if it continues, I'll talk to them offline and say, I really want to have your contribution. I need it. But I also want you to respect the time of others and just have a little heart-to-heart with a person.
Yep.
And I encourage people to do that if they're running meetings. So we've reached that magical point where Fred and I would love to hear from you on the things that you run into, both as a participant in meetings online or in person, or as a leader, team leader, on meetings, what you run into. What are some of the things you run into that you think are important and that we might be able to do better on, or where you have questions? We'd love to hear from you on that.
Yeah, and both good and consternations. I mean, if you have a great facilitator, what do they do? What are the things you notice that they do that make it work? And, you know, give us a good day story, good meeting story. But also, what are the things they do that trash the meeting or destroy it? Or, you know, what are the problems that you're... And as a participant, you're as much in charge of the meeting as anybody else, right? It's your contribution and participation and activity that can bend the difference between a really good productive meeting and one that's not. So there's plenty of contributions. It's not all the facilitator. They try, but they certainly need the participants to contribute and participate. So with that said, we'd love to hear from you. Yeah.
We'd love to hear from you. And Fred and I will, after we hear from you, we'll set a goal maybe to do some more focused podcasts on specific skills of team leading and running meetings and being a good team participant. Mm-hmm. And if you have a comment or an idea that you'd like to share, and we'd love to hear from you,
go to
ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR and let us know your ideas and questions that you have. You can also reach us on LinkedIn or on our about pages on Ascendo Reliability. Love to hear from you.
Well done, Carl. Nicely done. I was expecting the handoff there.
I'd give it a try.
Oh, you got it. You've heard it enough times, I think. Yeah. All right. Well, thanks, Carl. We'll talk to you again. I look forward to talking more about these the soft skills, as we call them.
Very good. Thanks, Fred. See you later.
Later. Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.